About one-third of the world's population is Christian. Each year, more than 25 million people are baptized into the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And each year, about 100,000 Christians are martyred, coming to share fully in the death of Christ. There has never been a century since Christ in which Christians did not give their lives for the faith. From the beginning, they were acknowledged as martyrs, those whose witness to Christ was writ in blood. They were buried beneath the altars, which is why even today every Catholic altar contains the relics, the bones of saints. Ours are underneath the altar, just as it would have been in the ancient church. But whether one considers absolute numbers or percentages, put bluntly, as John Allen does in his The Global War on Christians, we are, quote, today, indisputably, the most persecuted religious body on the planet, end quote. Allen's book easily marshals examples. The evangelical group Open Doors, devoted to monitoring anti-Christian persecution, estimates that 100 million Christians worldwide presently face interrogation, arrest, torture, and even death because of religious convictions. For example, in 2008, in northeastern India, a series of riots ended with as many as 500 Christians killed, many hacked to death by machete-wielding Hindu radicals. Thousands more were injured, and at least 50,000 were left homeless. In Nigeria, the militant Islamic group Boko Haram is held responsible for almost 3,000 deaths. Like its counterpart in Egypt, Christians and their churches are targeted. In North Korea, roughly a quarter of the country's 200,000 to 400,000 Christians are believed to be living in forced labor camps because of their refusal to join the national cult around founder Kim Il-sung. Some 300,000 Christians in North America have simply disappeared and are presumed dead. Before the first Gulf War, more than 1.5 million Iraqis were Christian, whose origins dated to the age of the apostles. A year ago, after relentless bombings and unrestrained persecution, the number of them in Iraq was close to only 100,000. And that was before the rise of ISIS and its declaration that there is nothing to give Christians but the sword. This summer in Mosul, Christians, including children, have been beheaded, even crucified. We are rightly horrified at the execution of two American journalists. How sad we only hear about American journalists because they give us the news. When unprecedented numbers of Christians, unprecedented, are being murdered, what does it mean to celebrate? This year, during our Sunday liturgies, the exaltation of the cross. The church father Tertullian said, "The blood of martyrs is the seed of the church." But this seed should never be blithely scattered. Even as the church celebrates her most faithful witnesses, she must also mourn their deaths. The church exists to midwife the kingdom of God, which is one of peace and justice. She cannot ignore the injustice, the violence perpetrated against her own people. The meaning of this feast cannot be that it is good for men and women and children to die violently for the faith, because in doing so they imitate Christ. To exalt the cross is not to celebrate violence, neither that inflicted upon Jesus nor upon his followers. One cannot suggest that what happened on Calvary 2 millennia ago cancels the contemporary evil perpetrated against Christians or anyone else. The meaning of the cross is not that violence has been transformed into something we proclaim, paradoxically with an eye towards heaven, as good. That would be to make the cross an enemy of men and women. Because what is evil? And his crucifixion surely was, cannot be baptized by blather into something good. If the cross were merely a human horror made inspirational by centuries of whitewashing piety, then to exalt Calvary would be to perpetrate the very evil cited by the critics of religion. It would be akin to that perversion of authentic Islam, which tells the fanatically violent that paradise awaits them. No, the cross cancels our calculations. From the earth, looking up at its beams, at his bloody, outstretched arms, it defies sense. Those who stood beneath the cross saw it as the death of all their hopes, the terrible judgment of God upon the wickedness of the earth. Only God can comprehend the cross, which is to say that no human dares assign its meaning. To call the cross the great mystery of God is to rebuke every human effort to domesticate the divine. The death of Jesus on the cross is not a past event that makes the present palatable for the persecuted. No. We must see the cross as the eternal, the standing outside of time, the ever ancient and ever new decision of God, which is to enter into the abasement of sin and its consequent suffering. Christians don't go to their violent deaths because Christ went to Calvary. Christ embraces the wood of the cross because the innocent died before him, died after him, continue to die. The cross draws all of human history, past, present, and future, into those outstretched arms. The will of God, Father, Son, and Spirit is revealed there. The meaning of history is curiously carved into its wood. He emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, coming in human likeness, and found human in appearance. He humbled himself, becoming obedient to death, even to death on a cross. No religion can transform evil into good. Evil is absolute inanity, the complete absence of the good. You cannot directly do evil to accomplish the good. Those who try only diminish the good in themselves and in the world. You can suffer evil, like the martyrs, or resist it, like those who fight to restrain it. Martyrs are not passive, and good soldiers are not evil. They are righteous in resisting. But there is a reason the cross of Christ belongs on ambulances and not at the head of armies. Christ chooses to suffer the cross. Note the present tense of that verb. Christ chooses. It will never enter the past tense until the world, its sin and its suffering, is gathered to him.